Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wendy Wimmer was born and raised in Green Bay, Wisconsin. She's just released her debut short story collection, Entry Level. Former Beta guest Dan Shawn describes Wendy's stories as propulsive, delightfully unpredictable, and utterly addictive. And he's absolutely right. Wendy's stories often veer into the uncanny. Take the opening story, for example. It's called Strange Magic. It takes place at a roller skating rink where the employees discover that they can reverse the aging process. Another story, Texts from Beyond, is about a telemarketing company that communicates with the dead. A recurring theme through all 15 stories in Entry Level is Wendy's focus on characters who are underemployed. She joined us from her home in Green Bay to talk about her process, why the Dairy State is rich with stories, and why she wanted to represent Wisconsin's working class.
I come from a very blue-collar or maybe even no-collar background where my family was a restaurant family going back on both sides of my maternal lineage. They grew up in restaurants and bars and what they call in northern Wisconsin taverns. In fact, my grandmother and my great-grandmother literally lived in the tavern that they ran. So I heard many, many stories of that. Very much a affinity with being underemployed. And then I said I'd never work in restaurants. And of course I did. But, you know, I later became like a cubicle denizen of a cubicle landscape and, you know, just this massive acres of cubicles, and was doing my graduate work while I was programming a computer for, I just actually looked at my pension report and it told me how much I was making. Back then it was like $22,000 a year I was making and getting my master's at the same time. In fact, many of the stories are based on, you know, real life experience or inspired by real life experiences that I had, especially working in the call center from Text from Beyond. I worked in a call center for 4 years.
Yeah, that's why there's this authenticity in all the stories. And I couldn't help but think when you mentioned cubicles, I couldn't help think of my fellow Canadian Douglas Copeland's reference. I think he coined the term veal fattening pens. And
yes,
he's one of the writers who's, you have many writers who you list at the end, and he's one of your favorites, isn't he?
Yes. He very much is. And it's interesting because when I first started working at the company where I was coding, we didn't even get whole cubicles. We just had like a line of desks. So it reminded me very much of cow stanchions. If you're, you know, grew up in a rural background with all the butts facing out toward the aisle, that was us. We had like no privacy. We just had like these little half walls. So it was very kind of impersonal and almost dehumanizing in so many ways. I'm delighted to see it resonates with a lot of people, you know, even people, some people who are my coworkers were at the book launch back then. And they were like, oh, I was hoping this was about the help desk. So that was an exciting experience to have.
That's great. Yeah, definitely. One reviewer has described your characters as damaged people. Do you see them that way?
I think that life is really difficult to get out without a little bit of damage. So I think of them as imperfect as we all are, and oftentimes damaged by the universe that is maybe predatory or at best disregards them. But I also see them as having hope. You know, they're being strong, they're surviving, they're finding a way to make it work, even though the system is kind of against them. You know, we have, I think about Grace, who's dealing with her, you know, being responsible for the care of an aging parent who is ill and not being able to get any support from the system because her insurance isn't enough to cover the care for her mother, but she's also got to work.
Yeah, that's a great description. I love that description, imperfect as we all are. I want to ask you about the opening story, Strange Magic. Where did the idea for this story come from?
So when I was a child, this is one of the few locations that's actually named for the real place. There was a roller skating rink in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and my parents had to work during the day on Saturdays, again, working in restaurants and service industry. And my stepfather's sister was 15 or 16, and she worked at the roller arena. And that was like her job. That was her Saturday job. She was a kid. And my mom would say, hey, do you want to be babysat by Aunt Mary? And she would then just drop me off at the roller arena. I don't even know if she gave me money to go in because she just assumed that this 15-year-old kid was going to like sneak me into the roller skating rink and then also babysit me. And I thought it was great because it meant I got to spend all day roller skating. So that was the inspiration. When Mary Ellen's left breast grew back on its own during our Saturday dinner break, we had confirmation that something weird was happening. It was between shifts at the roller arena. A private Cub Scout party had just left, and our Saturday night late skate didn't open for another 2 hours. Wasted skate was our little staff secret. 2 hours to kill and a 24-pack of Old Milwaukee, because these days we weren't likely to party after closing down and were more likely to collapse a lung trying to hurdle the mop bucket like we used to 20 years back. Roll Arena was a legit place in Green Bay. It just closed down not too long ago when the owner retired. And I just have so many memories of the songs. And I remember when I was a little kid, there was a song Wildfire, which is a terrible song, by the way. But it is about like a horse that runs away and it somehow a killing frost kills it, which doesn't even really make sense because killing frosts like kill your tomatoes. It doesn't kill, an actual stallion. And I used to always want them to play that song and ABBA's Dancing Queen, because like when I was zooming around the skating rink, it just felt like I was a little bit like I was flying. So I think that's where the inspiration for that story came from. She ran calling wildfire,
calling wildfire. It's such an intriguing idea, and just I was just so in awe of just how you paid attention to all the details. Like, for instance, you got to roller skate counterclockwise. That works. If you skate clockwise, that doesn't work. The disco ball needed to be spinning, and it's not clear if the laser beams have any effect. And it's just such a compelling idea. And I'm wondering if you could kind of walk, or should I say skate us through the creative process of writing Strange Magic?
Absolutely. I was attending a workshop or a writer's conference, actually from another guest of Beta, Dan Sean, was running it. And he leads a very kind of organic and almost like a, subconscious level of story origination that he was taught by Linda Berry, another Wisconsin resident. And it involves like starting with a word and coming up with the images that flood your mind with that word. And then from that image that you get, further fleshing it out and further developing it. And one of the words, I think the word that I used was sweat. And I remember thinking about the difference between like the clean sweat when I was a teenager of, especially roller skating. I used to roller skate a lot. And that was the kernel of the story. And as we fleshed that out, I could hear like the soundtrack of a roller skating rink, the various sounds that you hear, the wheels kind of going over the rink, the actual music that's involved, which of course plays a huge part Strange Magic, which by the way, the original name for that was Skate Queen. We changed it because I wanted to bring in more to that connection of the music that's playing with the Moog synthesizers, and that is a callback to ELO.
Yeah, that's a great title, and you nailed the music playlist. Like it was great. It was so great just how you did that.
And thank
it's
you.
It's just such a great story. Many of your stories include weird, kind of uncanny, almost supernatural elements. How do you decide which stories to include these elements in and which stories not to include them in? Is it just kind of the process of writing through them, or do you know in advance?
I think the story decides. In fact, I absolutely do not know in advance. In fact, there's a story in the collection that's set on a cruise ship called Bisserity. And in that story, originally, the story I intended to write had talking marine animals in it. And by the time I got to the end of the story, that's not the story it was. It was you know, that there was no place for them. The story ended before the talking marine animals showed up. So it needed to end there. And sometimes it's about, this sounds very kind of hokey and hippie, but it's about the story deciding how it fits in the world. You know, if I try to take the wheel and drive it, you get a lot of kind of feeling forced, and it's not in some ways pleasing. Also, it's kind of like the difference between when somebody makes you a salad versus when you create your own salad, and somehow that salad doesn't taste as good as if somebody else makes the salad. If you kind of like sit back and just find out what happens as a writer, it's much more satisfying to you. And of course, there's only one reader you're guaranteed to satisfy as a writer, and that's you. So I'm always trying to make something that I find satisfying, but also I don't want to get in my way of reaching that satisfaction point.
Mm-hmm. And the thing I've learned from talking to so many writers is so many of them say, and it sounds like it's true of you, that, yeah, if you know what the ending of the story is, then you don't want to write it because there's no magic, there's no surprise for you.
Well, very much so. And I care a lot about endings especially, and sometimes the ending already forms itself. Sometimes the ending is about the ending is there. I know that scene, and the discovery process is finding out, how did I get here? How did that happen? So for instance, in Where She Went and Car People, those two stories, I had the last image when I started. That was the beginning of the process for me. I knew where it was going, but I had no idea how it got there, and I had to find that out.
Your writing style has been described as innovative, darkly humorous, wry, and whimsical. I'm curious about how you would describe your writing style.
I would describe it as scary, funny, sad, like with slashes. Yeah. And actually, Dan and I were talking about our styles, and that's what we both kind of landed on. That is, I find that there's so much humor in these odd moments, and yet there's also so much sadness in funny moments in some ways, and everything's a little uncertain, so a little scariness is I'm a little spooked by things that most people aren't spooked by, and then I'm also not spooked by things that other people are spooked by, so I find that incredibly interesting to kind of situate myself in that kind of axis between those three spaces.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us examples of things that you're spooked by that other people aren't?
And you know, like those jumpy sock wind guys in front of cars.
Oh yeah.
Those are the most terrifying things I've ever seen. I am so freaked out by that.
Yeah. I love the way you use a name as a verb in your stories. For example, go all Camus about the futility of the situation and trying to Sherlock my way through the litany of human ailments. Is this something you do in everyday conversations?
Totally.
Do you?
Totally.
Can you give us an example of what you would say? Because you haven't said anything, you haven't used it yet in the interview.
Well, I will say that I must do it so frequently that my husband the other day was drinking a coffee and then he said, "Oh, I just Wendy'd my shirt." which made me feel really great about my own ability to, you know, drink without spilling on myself.
Yeah.
and we have a friend who's very pedantic, and so often, you know, we'll make a joke about, you know, we're going to Scott up this situation.
Yeah. You had the chance to talk to my fellow Canadian Margaret Atwood a while back about a pandemic novel you were working on. Would you mind sharing the conversation you had with her, with us?
Absolutely. We were talking a lot about migratory birds for most of the conversation, because I didn't want to be like that person who was, you know, had this great treasure of a living author in their car and is like, "So can you tell me about how to get past writer's block?" I didn't want to be that person. So we ended up talking a lot about migratory bird patterns and you know, Canada geese. And then it turned into a conversation about, you know, she said, "So tell me," you know, after a while, maybe I had earned her trust or I hadn't killed us yet in the car.
maybe both.
And she said, "So tell me a little bit about your work." And I had also, instead of bringing her one of her more popular or famous novels to sign, I had her sign Interviews with the Dead. which is her craft novel. So she was like, okay, what's going on with you? And so I talked to her a little bit about the pandemic, and this was way before the pandemic. And I was, at the time, I was struggling with the fact that, and this is a bigger issue that I'm having with my work right now, is that my novel has essentially gone from being speculative to not at all speculative. But at the time, I was really dealing with the fact that a lot of the things that I was writing about in the novel was people were like, that would never happen. That would never happen. And she said everything in her novels that she has called, you know, speculative fiction and everything, nothing was speculative. Nothing was out of the ordinary. Every single thing had happened. So as long as I based it in authenticity and reality, I could be as speculative as I wanted without fear of it being unbelievable.
Yeah. Wendy Wimmer, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Entry Level. It's an awesome collection, and I can't wait to read your novels.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been fun.
Wendy Wildfire Wimmer is the author of the short story collection Entry Level. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Michael Imperioli, Andrew Renzi, and Wendy Wimmer. Beta is available to follow on Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating and comment or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
When your time comes, you either step up or you start looking for a new career.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Next time you see my face, show some respect.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Is that him? With the sombrero on?